Good evening. I'd like to talk tonight about, and particularly I'd like to talk about it tonight because we're coming up on Thanksgiving and Christmas. I'd like to talk about gratitude. Tonight I want to talk about another of the three pillars of Buddhism, which is primarily generosity, but also gratitude and loving kindness. And some of the stories about the Buddha suggest that the first thing he emphasized was generosity in teaching, particularly lay people. So I'd like to talk about that tonight. And I'd like to talk about it from the point of view that it's an opportunity. Gratitude and generosity and loving kindness are practices that really support transforming the way that our mind works, at least for those of us who don't dwell in those places all of the time, that we can actually retrain our minds with deliberate practice to be inclined toward positive thoughts, positive ways of relating to the world, rather than negative ones. Most of us, I think, are here. I don't mean to be presumptuous, but certainly I came to this practice because my mind was seriously habituated in the direction of afflictive thoughts and emotions. I spent a lot of time there. And so I'd like to talk about these possibilities for us. And I'd just like to say that I have found in personal experience that they are, in fact, they can be realized. I'm not claiming that I realize them every moment of my life, but they can be significantly realized through practice. So I thought just to encourage your participation to think about the kinds of difficulties that we're all potentially facing over the next month or so. What kinds of stresses, what kinds of suffering, what kinds of afflictive emotions, disappointments, fears, are kind of clustered around Thanksgiving and Christmas. Are they? Is that just my own solitary experience? Or I see a few smiles out there suggesting that at least there's apparently, I don't need to embarrass anyone by having them tell me their stories, but there apparently are, if we just even reflect on it for a moment, some pretty strongly conditioned relationships that we have to these holidays. And if we ourselves don't have them, we certainly know people that do. Holidays that are become quite dreadful for some people when they weren't intended to be that way. And we all know the litany of things that go wrong. People kill each other even around disappointments in each other and disappointments in unmet expectations, unreciprocated love, whatever they are. I think most of us we get a lot of energy behind those kinds of thought trains. We can feel it in our bodies. We can make ourselves sick. Certainly tense. Certainly stomach aches, headaches, and possibly even serious illness. So all of those experiences that we share point to the idea that mental habits are very powerful. I submit that almost all of our habits are mental. There are possible chemical addictions, but for the most part, our habits are heavily conditioned by the way we relate to them mentally. So we have already taught ourselves, or we have had the potential to learn, that in fact we can condition our minds in particular directions, perhaps destructive ones, around destructive habits or destructive ways of relating to people or driving or whatever. You know, the list is very, very long. So what I would like to say, and what I really want to say tonight, and this is, I can summarize my talk at the beginning, is that by deliberately cultivating gratitude and generosity and loving kindness, we can decide and achieve a different inclination of our minds, where instead of when something comes up that is potentially difficult, we have the possibility of bringing one of those things, gratitude, generosity, or loving kindness, into play quite quickly in the thought train, and perhaps take ourselves away from that old habituated way of going off into a bitter spiral downward and start to think about things in a much different way. Even possibly receive the initial input in a quite different way if we have inclined our minds in an open and generous way. There's a phrase in Buddhism which I like a lot, that, you know, this idea that in the arising and passing of all phenomena, their rebirth is conditioned. And in this case, tonight, I want to apply that to our mental point of view, our mental posture, if you like. We can choose to either condition the rebirth of afflictive emotions and negative ways of looking at the world, or we can decide that we're going to undertake to change that and habituate ourselves to think of the world as a loving, supportive, and wonderful place. And as we do that, it becomes that, because that is the lens that we choose to put on through which to look at the world. And it really does change how we see things. So I thought what I'd like to do is to go through these a little bit in turn. First gratitude, then generosity, and then loving kindness, with the idea of pointing to some ways that you can practice cultivating these wholesome and skillful habits of mind. So the first one is I'd like to do is gratitude. And gratitude is not mentioned per se so much, but I think my own experience, gratitude is a really good starting point for launching oneself into generosity and loving kindness. It's a more perhaps selfish point of view, where one thinks about the way that we're grateful for things that others have done for us, or the ways that others have supported us or loved us. And that tends to encourage a like-minded way of thinking about them. So in my own experience, gratitude has been a really good starting place for cultivating generosity and loving kindness. And perhaps by coincidence, Thanksgiving comes first in this chain of events. So we have right in front of us here, a week from now, a day of gratitude. And what I've found, just for myself, to be quite helpful is to set aside some time, kind of like Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement. I like to set aside time as our lives don't perhaps permit a whole day, but whatever we can muster to enumerate for ourselves, silently or on paper, however we choose to do it, to enumerate people that we're grateful to, things that have happened that we're grateful for. Our life, health, our loved ones, and even if you really start to reach out there, even those difficult people who have given us the opportunity to grow through their difficult relations with us. And there's this practice has a way of gathering momentum. I last year I went on retreat. I was on a retreat when Thanksgiving came around, and I decided to spend the day doing this. And I thought when I started, well, you know, it's going to take me. I'll be done by in an hour or so. And actually, I didn't finish. I spent the whole day. And as I began to think about the people that had given me gifts over the years, gifts of love and caring and support, and in whatever ways they were, all the way back to childhood, Boy Scout leaders, whatever. The list got so long that I could not finish it by the end of the day. As I consciously went through my life, kind of as early as I could remember, on through and thought about things in terms of school and in terms of outside activities, in terms of my family, in terms of my work. The number of people that came into play was so staggering that I could not finish the exercise within that one day. And I really thought at the beginning it was going to be a half an hour to an hour. So what you find as you what I found as I started to encourage my mind to think in grateful ways about who had served me, my mind became more inclined to think about that. It became able to reach back and dig up memories that some of them, frankly, I am ashamed to say I'd long forgotten. People that had done wonderful things for me, and I'd basically they'd slipped off the chart. And by the end of the day, I was literally weeping. I mean, the sense of gratitude was so powerful as I began to see how many people in my life had served me. And when your mind is in that place, it's really hard to get upset about things, to get angry or reactive. So it's a wonderful state of mind. I don't claim to keep it all the time, you know, but I can, if I can remember to actually tap into that, I can, and nurture that, I can. It becomes more accessible to me. I can use it more often, more quickly, which is even more important, particularly if one's about to lose it or something. It just becomes a much more accessible tool. Now I'd like to shift to generosity. And I think of generosity, it is, of course, the obvious thing. Generosity is a sharing of our resources. It's a sharing of our material wealth. We give monetary donations for things that we think are important. We give our time and energy to things that causes or to our loved ones or whatever it is. There are lots and lots of ways to practice generosity just with that. But I think the real intent of Buddha's teachings, at least in my own experience, is that, again, this attitude of mind of instead of saying, you know, to be crass about it, what's in it for me? Instead, what can I do to serve others? That attitude of mind that comes about first in the simple way of offering offerings of material wealth or time, it undercuts the self-orientation of our thinking. It basically means that we're starting to open up to not only that we have things that we really want to offer others in terms of those simple things, but we also want to not ask as much of others. We want to not hold on to our views as much, to have our own opinions carry the day as often. There's a whole way that generosity of spirit permeates our whole relationship to the world, so that no longer are we caught by having to have life our way. It can just as easily be someone else's way or everyone else's way. And a lot of our suffering comes from not getting it our way. And so to be able to not need to have that happen is a very wonderful outgrowth of a generosity of spirit. I heard a couple of nice stories around this I'd like to share with you. One I just heard yesterday, I was talking to a friend about this, and he said he had just heard about my friend lives in New York, and he had been at a social gathering with a woman who was driving back with her husband to New York from a long car trip, and they were lamenting the arrival of Christmas and birthdays and all that stuff, where they had small children, and all these parents were giving all of these kids presents, and the presents weren't needed, and they were largely not wanted, and there was a whole lot of shopping and swapping and going on, and it all seemed to be to very little avail, and creating a lot of resentment. And she said, why don't we take these gifts that everybody's giving and go ahead and get them, and then have the kids that receive them give them to children who don't have presents. And so she's actually started something called Kids for Kids, which started out just being a present swap, and it's now grown into labors and time spent. And so all of these relatively well-to-do kids are suddenly get involved in generosity activities instead of receiving activities. And it's apparently a pretty big success. I thought it was a pretty nice story. Another story I heard recently was about how the Burmese people celebrate birthdays. If it were my birthday, all of my friends would come over, and I would cook them a meal, and I would spend the day doing things for them. And they actually have come to believe that I'm going to have a lot better birthday giving than receiving. And it's actually an institutionalized part of their culture. So there are alternatives to how we see these things. And I thought that was a pretty nice story too. And again, we all know lots and lots of ways to practice generosity, and this idea of creating a list like I did for the people I was grateful to, that's obviously something that one can do. One can also just start doing it, you know, just whatever it is, however one wants to go about doing that. I'm retired now, and I used to sit down at, you know, and kind of, I would respond all year long to different solicitations for time and money in a rather impatient, thoughtless kind of a way, just because I knew I ought to be doing something, but I didn't really have time to think about it. And after I retired, I decided I do have time to think about that now, and I actually sat down and began to really think about where were the places that I wanted to put my effort in my life, not only in terms of my labors, but also my resources. And that instead of just kind of scattering it all around mindlessly, frankly, I hate to say, instead really saying, okay, you know, these are just my opinions, but these are the things that I think are important, and I'd like to be able to narrow that down to enough focus to actually make a difference rather than just sending $10 to everybody that said something. And so I found in that process, which was created more out of a view that I had about how I might do something, I found that my consciousness around it started increasing. I just started paying a lot more attention to all of the activities that are out there, the things that maybe I should consider. And I began to see how many people were out there doing generous things and doing wonderful things for their communities. And so the whole process that started out in a rather functional kind of limited way just has grown into something much bigger. So just, I guess the way I would say that is just putting your intention on trying to put some part of your life energy into this activity of generosity starts to cultivate momentum and get yourself going in that direction. And of course, one of the obvious benefits of it is that every time you give something away, you get this immediate, very pleasant hit from that. But you also create in yourself a sense of abundance as opposed to scarcity. You habituate your mind to thinking in terms of you have enough to share rather than you don't have enough. And that's a much, much better place to look at life from. There's just a lot less suffering there. The last thing is loving kindness on this list. And is there anyone here who hasn't had any introduction to metta practice? Okay. So metta is the Pali word for loving kindness, and there are specific practices that are established in Buddhism to cultivate loving kindness. There are recitations of first, they're more like, they're sometimes referred to as metta resolves, where you have a phrase that you have found that you feel works for you, and you wish yourself well, basically. You start with yourself and you wish yourself well, and it might include, for example, I wish myself safety. I wish myself health, good health. I wish myself happiness and peace. And then you extend that to other people. You start with yourself with the idea that if you don't feel good about yourself, it's pretty hard to turn around and really genuinely extend that outward to other people. Although sometimes you might find it easier to start with a loved one and then come to yourself later. But basically the idea is you start with yourself or a loved one, and then you extend it out to people who are more neutral and then people who are even difficult. So you can actually cultivate the idea of extending loving kindness to people that are difficult. Doesn't mean you agree with what they're doing, but you know deeply, don't we, that if they had all of those things in their life, they would probably be less difficult for themselves and others. So it's that kind of putting your mind inclined toward wishing good for everyone, good in all ways. And then, of course, you can actually practice those things. You can nurture other people. You can show your love to other people. You can do those things. And then there's a Metta Sutta, which is one of the Buddha's basic teachings, and I'd like to share that with everyone. If you could pass these around. I'm sorry, I'm strung to this. If you could pass those around, please. This is a traditional chant amongst Buddhist monastics and also lay people. For our convenience, it's been translated into English. And I would like to just read it out loud, and if you don't mind, I'll do it that way. And these are for you to take home if you like. And as I read it, I'd like to point out a couple of things. This is what should be done by one who is skillful in goodness. That's sila, morality. Directly, immediately pointing to that. Now this is a teaching on loving kindness, and the place that it starts is with morality. And who knows the path of peace? Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. So in that first part, we've got moral behavior. We have renunciation in the word frugal. We have humbleness, modesty. Lots of guidance about personal behavior. Keeping in mind that this is a teaching on loving kindness. Now, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. So that's the first phrase that's close to what I told you about with the metta wishes, that may all people be well, may all people be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and yet to be born, may all beings be at ease. So there's no editing going on here. There isn't anyone excluded from this list. Any human being, any animal, any amoeba. This is a really inclusive idea of inclining the mind toward this kind of well-wishing. Top of the second column. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Again, morality. Now morality of mind as well as action. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downward to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. So this is, these are words reminiscent of meditating. These are words of very deep concentration, whether standing, walking, sitting, or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection of kindness. This is said to be the sublime abiding. Can't get much better than that. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, wisdom, being freed from all sense desires, the end of craving, is not born again into this world, enlightenment. So this sutta suggests that you can start by being a nice guy and end up enlightened. This is pretty powerful stuff. In generosity, there is an implicit renunciation. It's the renunciation of one's own needs with respect to others' needs. Obviously, that there's a middle way always in this practice. It isn't about starving yourself or neglecting yourself. It's about finding a balance. And the renunciation, as with generosity and gratitude and loving kindness, is broadens out into the renunciation of lots of things like holding to fixed views, like giving up craving and results and one's own views. And the final teaching, the seminal teaching of the Buddha, according to some stories, is his words: "Nothing whatsoever shall be clung to as I or mine." Renunciation of self. So there's a lot of in all of this. These practices, they are inclining one toward much more profound, in much more profound directions, and an openness of mind, an openness of spirit that gives one access to insights and understandings that lighten the load, the afflictive emotion load in our lives in very unexpected ways. It's not a surprise then that the Buddha put generosity at the beginning of his whole teachings. It wasn't put there so that he could get enough to eat. I'm sure that that's occurred to people. Gee, why does the Buddha always talk about generosity? Is it so he can get something to eat? Because after all, he's not making his own food. But that's not what it's about at all. He is deliberately setting the game up that way so that the lay people are giving generously to support the monks so that they will be able to access this kind of understanding of life. So that's my summary. I would hope that with this practice, not only will you get through the holidays more happily, but you will get through the rest of your life more happily. That life will become progressively more delicious and more beautiful as you look at it through eyes of gratitude and generosity and loving kindness more and more. And in that, in so doing, you know that you will, it will be contagious in all kinds of subtle ways. So, thank you.